Chapter 50 Meetings at the Eye. Leading the bay, Rand followed the green man with the other Emmonsfielders, all staring as if they could not decide whether to look at the green man or the forest. The green man was a legend, of course, with stories told about him and the Tree of Life in front of every fireplace in the Two Rivers, and not just for the children. But after the blight, the trees and flowers would have been a wonder of normality, even if the rest of the world was not still trapped in winter. Perrin hung a little to the rear. When Rand glanced back, the big, curly-haired youth looked as if he did not want to hear anything else the green man had to say. He could understand that. Child of the dragon. Warily, he watched the green man, walking ahead with Moraine and Lan, butterflies surrounding him in a cloud of yellows and reds. What did he mean? No, I don't want to know. Even so, his step felt lighter, his legs springier. The uneasiness still lay in his gut, churning his stomach, but the fear had become so diffuse, it might as well be gone. He did not think he could expect more, not with the blight half a mile away, even if Moraine was right about nothing from the blight being able to enter here. The thousands of burning points piercing his bones had winked out. At the very moment he came within the green man's domain, he was sure. It's him that winked them out, he thought. The green man. And this place. Egwene felt it, and Nynaeve too. The soothing peace, the calm of beauty. He could tell. They wore small, serene smiles and brushed flowers with their fingers, pausing to smell and breathing deep. When the green man noticed, he said, "Flowers are meant to adorn. The plants or humans, it is much the same. None mind, so long as you don't take too many." And he began plucking one from this plant and one from that, never more than two from any. Soon Nynaeve and Egwene wore caps of blossoms in their hair, pink wild rose and yellow bell and white morning star. The wisdom's braid seemed a garden of pink and white to her waist. Even Moraine received a pale garland of morning star on her brow, woven so deftly that the flowers still seemed to be growing. Rand was not sure they were not growing. The green man tended his forest garden as he walked, while he talked softly to Moraine, taking care of whatever needed care without really thinking about it. His hazelnut eyes caught a crooked limb on a climbing wild rose, forced into an awkward angle by the blossom-covered limb of an apple tree, and he paused, still talking, to run his hand along the bend. Rand was not sure if his eyes were playing tricks or if thorns actually did bend out of the way so as not to prick those green fingers. When the towering shape of the green man moved on, the limb ran straight and true, spreading red petals among the white of apple blossoms. He bent to cup one huge hand around a tiny seed lying on a patch of pebbles, and when he straightened, a small shoot had roots through the rocks to good soil.
"All things must grow where they are, according to the pattern," he explained over his shoulder, as if apologizing, "and face the turning of the wheel. But the Creator will not mind if I give just a little help."
Rand led Red around the chute, careful not to let the bay's hooves crush it. It did not seem right to destroy what the green man had done just to avoid an extra step. Egwene smiled at him, one of her secret smiles, and touched his arm. She was so pretty, with her unbound hair full of flowers, that he smiled back at her until she blushed and lowered her eyes. "I will protect you," he thought. "Whatever else happens, I will see you safe, I swear it." Into the heart of the spring forest, the green man took them, to an arched opening in the side of a hill. It was a simple stone arch, tall and white, and on the keystone was a circle halved by a sinuous line, one half rough, the other smooth. The ancient symbol of Aes Sedai. The opening itself was shadowed. For a moment, everyone simply looked in silence. Then Moraine removed the garland from her hair, and gently hung it on the limb of a sweetberry bush beside the arch. It was as if her movement restored speech.
"It's in there?" Nynaeve asked. "What we've come for?"
"I'd really like to see the Tree of Life," Matt said, not taking his eyes off the halved circle above them.
"We can wait that long, can't we?"
The green man gave Rand an odd look, then shook his head.
"Avan de Sora is not here. I have not rested beneath its ungentle branches in 2,000 years.
The Tree of Life is not why we came, Moraine said firmly. She gestured to the arch. In there is.
I will not go in with you, the green man said.
The butterflies around him swirled as if they shared some agitation.
I was set to guard it long, long ago, but it makes me uneasy to come too close. I feel myself being unmade. My end is linked with it, somehow. I remember the making of it. Some of the making. Some.
His hazelnut eyes stared, lost in memory, and he fingered his scar.
It was the first days of the breaking of the world, when the joy of victory over the Dark One turned bitter with the knowledge that all might yet be shattered by the weight of the shadow. 100 of them made it, men and women together. The greatest Aes Sedai works were always done so, joining Sidine and Sidar, as the true source is joined. They died all to make it pure, while the world was torn around them. Knowing they would die, they charged me to guard it against the need to come. It was not what I was made for, but all was breaking apart, and they were alone, and I was all they had. It was not what I was made for, but I have kept the faith.
He looked down at Moraine, nodding to himself.
I have kept faith until it was needed, and now it ends.
You have kept the faith better than most of us who gave you the charge, the Aes Sedai said. Perhaps it will not come as badly as you fear. The scarred, leafy head shook slowly from side to side.
I know an ending when it comes, Aes Sedai. I will find another place to make things grow.
Nut-brown eyes swept sadly over the green forest.
Another place, perhaps. When you come out, I will see you again, if there is time.
With that, he strode away, trailing butterflies, becoming one with the forest more completely than Land's cloak ever could. What did he mean? Matt demanded. If there's time. Come, Moraine said. And she stepped through the arch. Lan went at her heels. Ran was not sure what he expected when he followed. The hair stirred uneasily on his arms and rose on the back of his neck. But it was only a corridor, its polished walls rounded overhead like the arch, winding gently downward. There was headroom enough and to spare for Loyal. There would have been room enough for the green man. The smooth floor, slick to the eye like oiled slate, yet somehow gave a sure footing. Seamless white walls glittered with uncounted flecks and untold colors, giving a low, soft light even after the sunlit archway vanished around a curve behind. He was sure the light was no natural thing, but he sensed it was benign, too. Then why is your skin still crawling? Down they went, and down. There, Moraine said at last, pointing. Ahead. And the corridor opened into a vast, domed space, the rough living rock of its ceiling dotted with clumps of glowing crystals. Below it, a pool took up the entire cavern except for the walkway around it, perhaps 5 paces wide. In the oval shape of an eye, the pool was lined about its rim with a low, flat edging of crystals that glowed with a duller yet fiercer light than those above. Its surface was as smooth as glass and as clear as the wine spring water. Rand felt as if his eyes could penetrate it forever, but he could not see any bottom to it. The Eye of the World, Moraine said softly beside him. As he looked around in wonder, he realized that the long years since the making, 3,000 of them, had worked their way while no one came. Not all the crystals in the dome glowed with the same intensity. Some were stronger, some weaker, some flickered, and others were only faceted lumps to sparkle in a captured light. Had all shone, the dome would have been as bright as noonday, but they made it only late afternoon now. Dust coated the walkway, and bits of stone and even crystal. Long years waiting, while the wheel turned and ground. But what is it? Matt asked uneasily. That doesn't look like any water I ever saw. He kicked a lump of dark stone the size of his fist over the edge. The stone struck the glassy surface and slid into the pool without a splash or so much as a ripple. As it sank, the rock began to swell, growing ever larger, larger and more attenuated, a blob the size of his head that Rand could almost see through, a faint blur as wide as his arm was long. Then it was gone. He thought his skin would creep right off his body.
"What is it?"
he demanded, and was shocked at the hoarse harshness of his own voice.
"It might be called the essence of Saidin." The Aes Sedai's words echoed around the dome. "The essence of the male half of the true source, the pure essence of the power wielded by men before the time of madness. The power to mend the seal on the Dark One's prison, or to break it open completely."
"The light shine on us and protect us,"
Nynaeve whispered. Egwene clutched her as if she wanted to hide behind the wisdom. Even Lan stirred uneasily, though there was no surprise in his eyes. Stone thudded into Rand's shoulders, and he realized he had backed as far as the wall, as far from the eye of the world as he could get. He would have pushed himself right through the wall if he could have. Matt, too, was splayed out against the stone, as flat as he could make himself. Perrin was staring at the pool with his axe half drawn. His eyes shone, yellow and fierce.
"I always wondered," Loyal said uneasily. "When I read about it, I always wondered what it was. Why? Why did they do it? And how?"
"No one living knows."
Moraine no longer looked at the pool. She was watching Rand and his two friends, studying them, her eyes weighing.
"Neither the how, nor more of the why, than that it would be needed one day. And that need would be the greatest and most desperate the world had faced to that time. Perhaps ever would face. Many in Tar Valon have attempted to find a way to use this power, but it is as untouchable for any woman as the moon is for a cat. Only a man could channel it, but the last male Aes Sedai is nearly 3,000 years gone. Yet the need they saw was a desperate one. They worked through the taint of the Dark One on Saidin to make it, and make it pure, knowing that doing so would kill them all. Male Aes Sedai and female together. The Green Man spoke true. The greatest wonders of the Age of Legends were done in that way. Saidin and Saidar, together. All the women in Tar Valon, all the Aes Sedai in all the courts and cities, even with those in the lands beyond the waste, even counting those who may still live beyond the Arath Ocean, could not fill a spoon with the power, lacking men to work with them.
Rand's throat rasped as if he had been screaming.
"Why did you bring us here?"
"Because you are Taviren."
The Aes Sedai's face was unreadable. Her eyes shimmered and seemed to pull at him.
"Because the Dark One's power will strike here, and because it must be confronted and stopped, or the shadow will cover the world. There is no need greater than that. Let us go out into the sunlight again, while there is yet time."
Without waiting to see if they would follow, she started back up the corridor with Lan, who stepped perhaps a bit more quickly than usual for him. Egwene and Nynaeve hurried behind her. Rand edged along the wall. He could not make himself get even one step closer to what the pool was, and scrambled into the corridor in a tangle with Matt and Perrin. He would have run if it had not meant trampling Egwene and Nynaeve, Moraine and Lan. He could not stop shaking even when he was back outside.
"I do not like this, Moraine,"
Nynaeve said angrily when the sun shone on them again.
"I believe the danger is as great as you say, or I would not be here. But this is..."
"I have found you at last,"
Rand jerked as if a rope had tightened around his neck. The words, the voice, for a moment he believed it was Baalzamon. But the two men who walked out of the trees, faces hidden by their cowls, did not wear cloaks the color of dried blood. One cloak was a dark gray, the other almost as dark a green, and they seemed musty even in the open air. And the men were not fades. The breeze stirred their cloaks.
"Who are you?"
Lan's stance was cautious, his hand on his sword hilt.
"How did you come here? If you are seeking the Green Man..."
"He guided us."
The hand that pointed to Matt was old and shriveled to scarcely human, lacking a fingernail and with knuckles gnarled like knots in a piece of rope. Matt took a step back, eyes widening.
An old thing, an old friend, an old enemy. But he is not the one we seek,
the green-cloaked man finished. The other man stood as if he would never speak. Moraine straightened to her full height, no more than shoulder-high to any man there, but suddenly seeming as tall as the hills. Her voice rang like a bell demanding,
Who are you?
Hands pushed back hoods and ran goggled. The old man was older than old. He made Sen Bui look like a child in the blossom of health. The skin of his face was like crazed parchment drawn tight over a skull, then pulled tighter still. Wispy tufts of brittle hair stood at odd places on his scabrous scalp. His ears were withered bits like scraps of ancient leather. His eyes sunken, peering out of his head as if from the ends of tunnels. Yet the other was worse. A tight black leather carapace covered that one's head and face completely, but the front of it was worked into a perfect face. A young man's face, laughing wildly, laughing insanely, frozen forever. What is he hiding if the other shows what he shows? Then even thought froze in his head, shattered to dust, and blew away.
I am called Agenor, the old one said, and he is Balthamel. He no longer speaks with his tongue. The wheel grinds exceedingly fine over 3,000 years imprisoned.
His sunken eyes slid to the arch. Balthamel leaned forward, his mask's eyes on the white stone opening, as if he wanted to go straight in.
So long without, Agenor said softly. So long.
The light protect,
Loyal began, his voice shaking and cut off abruptly when Agenor looked at him.
The Forsaken, Matt said hoarsely, are bound in Sheol Ghul.
We're bound,
Agenor smiled. His yellowed teeth had the look of fangs.
Some of us are bound no longer. The seals weaken, Aes Sedai. Like Ishamael, we walk the world again, and soon the rest of us will come. I was too close to this world in my captivity, I and Balthamel, too close to the grinding of the wheel. But soon the great lord of the dark will be free and give us new flesh, and the world will be ours once more. You will have no Luz Theron Kinslayer this time. No Lord of the Morning to save you. We know the one we seek now, and there is no more need for the rest of you.
Lan's sword sprang from his scabbard, too fast for Rand's eye to follow. Yet the warder hesitated, eyes flickering to Moraine, to Nynaeve. The two women stood well apart. To put himself between either of them and the Forsaken would put him further from the other. Only for a heartbeat the hesitation lasted, but as the warder's feet moved, Agenor raised his hand. It was a scornful gesture, a flipping of his gnarled fingers as if to shoo away a fly. The warder flew backwards through the air as though a huge fist had caught him. With a dull thud, Lan struck the stone arch, hanging there for an instant before dropping in a flaccid heap, his sword lying near his outstretched hand.
No! Nynaeve screamed. Be still,
Moraine commanded, but before anyone else could move, the wisdom's knife had left her belt, and she was running toward the Forsaken, her small blade upraised.
The light blind you,
she cried, striking at Agenor's chest. The other Forsaken moved like a viper. While her blow still fell, Balthamel's leather-cased hand darted out to seize her chin, fingers sinking into one cheek while thumb dug into the other, driving the blood out with their pressure and raising the flesh in pale ridges. A convulsion racked Nynaeve from head to toe, as if she had been cracked like a whip. Her knife dropped uselessly from dangling fingers as Balthamel lifted her by his grip, brought her up to where the leather mask stared into her still quivering face. Her toes spasmed a foot above the ground. Flowers rained from her hair.
I have almost forgotten the pleasures of the flesh.
Agenor's tongue crossed his withered lips, sounding like stone on rough leather.
But Balthamel remembers much.
The laughter of the mask seemed to grow wilder, and the wail that left Nynaeve burned Rand's ears like despair ripped from her living heart. Suddenly Egwene moved, and Rand saw that she was going to help Nynaeve.
Egwene, no!
He shouted. But she did not stop. His hand had gone to his sword at Nynaeve's cry, but now he abandoned it and threw himself at Egwene. He thudded into her before her third step,
carrying them both to the ground. Egwene landed under him with a gasp, immediately thrashing to get free. Others were moving too, he realized. Perrin's axe whirled into his hands and his eyes glowed golden and fierce.
Wisdom,
Matt howled, the dagger from Shadow Logoth in his fist.
No, Rand called. You can't fight the Forsaken.
But they ran past him as if they had not heard, their eyes on Nynaeve and the two Forsaken. Agenor glanced at them, unconcernedly, and smiled. Rand felt the air stir above him like the crack of a giant's whip. Matt and Perrin, not even halfway to the Forsaken, stopped as if they had run into a wall, bounced back to sprawl on the ground.
Good, Agenor said. A fitting place for you. If you learn to abase yourself properly in worship of us, I might let you live.
Hastily, Rand scrambled to his feet. Perhaps he could not fight the Forsaken, no ordinary human could. But he would not let them believe for a minute that he was groveling before them. He tried to help Egwene up, but she slapped his hands away and stood by herself, angrily brushing off her dress. Matt and Perrin had also stubbornly pushed themselves unsteadily erect.
You will learn, Agenor said, if you want to live. Now that I have found what I need, his eyes went to the stone archway, I might take the time to teach you.
This shall not be.
The green man strode out of the trees with a voice like lightning striking an ancient oak.
You do not belong here.
Agenor spared him a brief contemptuous glance.
Begone! Your time is ended. All your kind but you long since dust. Live what life is left you and be glad you are beneath our notice.
This is my place, the green man said, and you shall hurt no living thing here.
Balthamel tossed Nynaeve aside like a rag. And like a crumpled rag, she fell, eyes staring, limp as if all her bones had melted. One leather-clad hand lifted, and the green man roared as smoke rose from the vines that wove him. The wind in the trees echoed his pain. Agenor turned back to Rand and the others as if the green man had been dealt with. But one long stride and massive leafy arms wrapped themselves around Balthamel, raising him high, crushing him against a chest of thick creepers, black leather mask laughing into hazelnut eyes dark with anger. Like serpents, Balthamel's arms writhed free, his gloved hands grasping the green man's head as though he would wrench it off. Flame shot up where those hands touched, vines withering, leaves falling. The green man bellowed as thick dark smoke poured out between the vines of his body. On and on he roared, as if all of him were coming out of his mouth with the smoke that billowed between his lips. Suddenly, Balthamel jerked in the green man's grasp. The Forsaken's hands tried to push him away instead of clutching him. One gloved hand flung wide, and a tiny creeper burst through the black leather. A fungus, such as rings trees in the deep shadows of the forest, ringed his arm, sprang from nowhere to full grown, swelling to cover the length of it. Balthamel thrashed, and a shoot of stinkweed ripped open his carapace. Lichens dug in their roots and split tiny cracks across the leather of his face. Nettles broke the eyes of his mask. Death's head mushrooms tore open the mouth. The green man threw the Forsaken down. Balthamel twisted and jerked as all the things that grew in the dark places, all the things with spores, all the things that loved the dank, swelled and grew, tore cloth and leather and flesh. Was it flesh, seen in that brief moment of verdant rage? To tattered shreds, and covered him until only a mound remained, indistinguishable from many in the shaded depths of the green forest, and the mound moved no more than they. With a groan like a limb breaking under too great a weight, the green man crashed to the ground. Half his head was charred black. Tendrils of smoke still rose from him, like gray creepers. Burned leaves fell from his arm as he painfully stretched out his blackened hand to gently cup an acorn. The earth rumbled as an oak seedling pushed up between his fingers. The green man's head fell, but the seedling reached for the sun, straining. Roots shot out and thickened. Delved beneath the ground and rose again, thickened more as they sank. The trunk broadened and stretched upward, bark turning gray and fissured and ancient. Limbs spread and grew heavy, as big as arms, as big as men, and lifted to caress the sky, thick with green leaves, dense with acorns. The massive web of roots turned the earth like plows as it spread. The already huge trunk shivered, grew wider, round as a house. Stillness came. And an oak that could have stood 500 years covered the spot where the green man had been,
marking the tomb of a legend. Nynaeve lay on the gnarled roots, grown curved to her shape, to make a bed for her to rest upon. The wind sighed through the oak's branches. It seemed to murmur farewell. Even Agenor seemed stunned. Then his head lifted, cavernous eyes burning with hate.
Enough! It is past time to end this.
Yes, Forsaken,
Moraine said, her voice as cold as deep winter ice.
Past time.
The Aes Sedai's hand rose, and the ground fell away beneath Agenor's feet. Flame roared from the chasm, whipped to a frenzy by wind howling in from every direction, sucking a maelstrom of leaves into the fire, which seemed to solidify into a red-streaked yellow jelly of pure heat. In the middle of it, Agenor stood, his feet supported only by air. The Forsaken looked startled, but then he smiled and took a step forward. It was a slow step, as if the fire tried to root him to the spot, but he took it, and then another.
Run,
Moraine commanded. Her face was white with strain.
All of you, run!
Agenor stepped across the air, toward the edge of the flames. Rand was aware of others moving, Matt and Perrin dashing away at the edge of his vision, Loyal's long legs carrying him into the trees. But all he could really see was Egwene. She stood there rigid, face pale and eyes closed. It was not fear that held her, he realized. She was trying to throw her puny, untrained wielding of the power against the Forsaken. Roughly, he grabbed her arm and pulled her around to face him.
Run!
He shouted at her. Her eyes opened, staring at him, angry with him for interfering, liquid with hate for Agenor, with fear of the Forsaken.
Run!
He said, pushing her toward the trees, hard enough to start her.
Run!
Once started, she did run. But Agenor's withered face turned toward him, toward the running Egwene behind him, as the Forsaken walked through the flames. As if what the Aes Sedai was doing did not concern Agenor at all. Toward Egwene.
Not her, Rand shouted. The light burn you, not her!
He snatched up a rock and threw it, meaning to draw Agenor's attention. Halfway to the Forsaken's face, the stone turned to a handful of dust. He hesitated only a moment, long enough to glance over his shoulder and see that Egwene was hidden in the trees. The flames still surrounded Agenor, patches of his cloak smoldering. But he walked as if he had all the time in the world, and the fire's rim was near. Rand turned and ran. Behind him, he heard Moraine begin to scream.